Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Facebook has nearly 3 billion monthly active users, 2.93 billion to be exact. Instagram, same company as Facebook, also has over 2 billion users, and TikTok with over a billion users. However, the number one app in the Apple App Store right now is Be Real. Do you know what that is? The social aspect of the internet is constantly evolving. In the past 10 years, powerful platforms have dominated the attention economy and stifled any potential competition. Either that or copied them or sucked them into their universe. That's what happened with Facebook and Instagram. The wild success of TikTok has changed the calculus of how social media platforms are thinking about our attention and their content and engagement strategies. But that might not be wise, argues Georgetown professor and New Yorker contributing writer Cal Newport, whose latest article for the magazine is called TikTok and the Fall of the Social Media Giants. And he joins me now to discuss. Hi, Cal. Nice to meet you.
Allison, thanks for having me on.
So you begin the piece with an anecdote about Blake Chanley, TikTok's president of Global Business Solutions. He was asked about competing with Facebook, and he called them, quote, a social platform, whereas TikTok is an entertainment platform. You know, in the past, you've called social media really just entertainment. What do you see as the difference between a Facebook and a TikTok?
Well, Facebook, really to a degree, I think we underappreciated, bases a lot of their success on the fact that they have this massive social graph, this network of friend and follow links that their users have painstakingly created button press by button press over the years. TikTok does none of that. They just offer pure entertainment. And Chanley was pointing out, this is a big difference. You're either a social network company or you're an entertainment company. It's hard to do both.
So why does it seem that the entertainment company of TikTok is having, a more significant cultural impact in this moment?
Well, there's sort of a Faustian bargain that the social media giants of the last decade had to make. That is, if they base their content on the social graph, they get protection from competition. So it's too hard for an upstart today to build a graph as large or influential as Twitter or as Instagram or as Facebook. But the downside of that deal is that it constrains to some degree what type of content they can offer. They need to be spreading information from follows. They want to be spreading things from friends. TikTok ignored the social graph, said we're going to have a simple but brutally effective machine learning loop that looks at all of the videos available on our platform, watch you as the individual user's behavior, and serve up exactly what you want to see. So they can go right for the dopamine jugular because they don't have to deal with the constraints of a social graph being the foundation for their content.
Why did you describe it as brutally effective?
Well, it's all, not to personify an algorithm, but it's actually quite simple what it does. As far as we can tell, the main thing that that algorithm looks at TikTok is how long you watch a video before you move on to the next, before you swipe to the next. And just by observing this watch time, it can converge in as quickly as 40 minutes to having an eerily effective, eerily on target stream of videos that you like. So I call it brutal because it tries to really integrate almost nothing but what are you watching, what are you not, how long do you watch this versus this, and it moves through that fitness landscape of what's going to press your buttons with an astonishing speed to get you a feed that's really hard to stop scrolling.
So you described that Facebook and Twitter at this point, they're almost, I almost like to say, too big to truly fail, that no one can really come for them. You better come for the king. Are they too big to fail, though? I know their size is what protects them at the moment. But given the success of something like TikTok, and we'll talk about Be Real in a minute.
Well, I think they're in danger. And they're in danger because to react to the immediate competition from TikTok, they are shifting their model to be more like TikTok. They're shifting away from the social graph. They're shifting more towards recommendations based purely off of algorithms. So one of the big arguments in my article is that if they leave the protection of using this hard to replicate social graph, they're going to enter a competitive landscape, not just with TikTok, but every other source of mobile entertainment I don't think they can survive long on their own without the digital castle walls of their social graph. And this is why I think TikTok may end up leading to the downfall of networks like Facebook, not because it's going to directly conquer it, but because it gets them to essentially leave their castle where they're vulnerable to attacks from all different sides.
So if you were in the room with Facebook leadership, you'd say, hey, dance with the ones that brung you. stay with what you do. Is that a matter of, you know, and you can't mind read, but having spent some time with some tech people, they're always looking what the other person is doing. It's sort of their attention is on what the guy next to him, as opposed to shoring up what they do. That's just anecdotal from my experience. I'm curious what you think.
I think Facebook is in the worst position here because they're a publicly traded company. So they are right now losing users. They are stagnating. Mm-hmm. And when they released in February a quarterly report that said that user growth has stagnated, their stock lost $200 billion of value in a single day. So The investor pressure there says you have to do something. Now, if you just entrenched onto the social graph, the problem is you are going to lose users. You could still be a very mm-hmm. profitable company because you would have a niche that would be hard for people to pry you out of, but you're not going to be growing. You're not going to be making the holders of your stock, the large hedge funds, happy with how you're performing. So I think they're in a much worse position than Twitter. Twitter has the ability, as we saw with Elon Musk's offer, they still have the possibility of going private. They still have the possibility of staying more specialized and focused. That probably would be what they have to do to survive.
So your point is that even if they did, let's say, Facebook stayed diligent and stayed focused, that still wouldn't work.
They're going to lose users. They're losing users. Their growth is stagnating. People are shifting over to TikTok. So yes, I think they cannot. There's no way they can maintain, at the very least, their growth trajectory. There's no way they can maintain that growth trajectory outside of acquisitions, which is probably what they'll end up doing, is just spending their cash to acquire their way into a different space. Maybe it's going to be the metaverse. Maybe it's going to be an emphasis on chat, like their WhatsApp acquisition. They're probably going to have to essentially spend their money to pivot away from the pure, here is distraction offered on a mobile app built from our social graph.
My guest is Cal Newport. He's a contributing writer for The New Yorker and associate professor of computer science at Georgetown University. His latest article in The New Yorker is titled TikTok and the Fall of Social Media Giants. So let's talk about TikTok and maybe some of TikTok's issues. There was one time during the Trump administration that TikTok was potentially going to be banned because of the app's connections to China. How did TikTok go from that moment to becoming, perhaps, you know, as you're describing it, one of the most powerful social media stories of the day?
Well, effectiveness. That machine learning loop that watches you and finds the absolute best videos to show you, displayed pleasingly full screen with no extra features you have to care about, buttons to press, profiles to build. The simplicity and effectiveness of what they were serving up is why they are doing so well. People load this app and within 10 minutes are entranced. So I think it's just a pure, strong execution on their fundamental business model that's fueling their recent success.
How long do you feel about TikTok's staying power?
I don't think that TikTok is going to be a long-lasting force. I think it's playing a role, as we're seeing in the downfall, perhaps, of the social media legacy giants by pulling them away from their competitive advantage. But it's a service that's built upon shallowness. There's nothing to it other than distraction. It's of the moment, but because it doesn't have these deep roots into something that's hard to replicate, I could imagine in 2 or 3 years, there'll be a new TikTok, a new sensation, something else that's catching users' attention. So it's going to do a lot of damage or disruption, depending on how you see it, to the space of social media. I don't think, however, it's going to be a long-lasting, influential company going forward.
We mentioned Twitter. I did want to make sure we discussed Twitter. You write about, it's interesting because you think about these moments in these social media platforms' life and these important moments, these decisions that are made. And you write about the decision of the tweet retweet button. In 2009, people don't remember, it wasn't always there. What was life like in Twitter before the retweet button? And then how did it change everything?
The retweet button is the story of Twitter prior to it being introduced. The service was mainly meant as a way to do short updates on your status, what you were up to, so your friends or people you knew could see what you were doing. That was the original conceit. The retweet button, what it unleashed was fierce viral dynamics. So now by simply pressing that button and spreading a message to all your followers, and then some subset of your followers doing the same, and some subset of their followers doing the same, a message could rise to dominate the network, be seen widely, incredibly quickly. And what this created was two things: a really effective distributed curation method, so that the best content on Twitter could be identified and spread to the users without there needing to be an algorithm or anyone else to select it. It also gave a lot of appeal to more famous or influential people. They saw the possibility for them to get instant renown, so you began to get more interesting people joining the network. So those two things, the distributed curation and the attraction of influential people, that both came together in 2009 and really helped Twitter take off.
You've described people's obsession with Twitter as misguided. Why?
Well, this was an earlier piece I wrote back when Musk was seriously considering buying it. And the argument I was making there is Twitter's interesting. It surely is distracting. But we're giving too much credit to it as it being central to our democracy, being central to how we gather and consume news. I mean, my reporting seems to indicate that there's a bias issue here. Those of us in media who write about Twitter use Twitter and it's at the center of our existences, but for actually most of the population, they don't. And I thought we were giving it too much power. It's a diversion for sure. It's fun for sure. But I don't think it's actually the digital town square, the place where we adjudicate decisions, assign value, assign blame. Twitter really shouldn't serve that. I don't think it actually does serve that role in our country.
We talked briefly about how Facebook has started to make changes, sort of tilting towards the TikTok dynamic. What about Twitter? Has it made any changes in thinking about competing with TikTok?
Not as aggressively as Instagram and Facebook, which are, of course, both owned by the same parent company, Meta. They have been making some changes. They have been working on integrating video better. But for the most part, I think Twitter is a little bit more, I don't want to say chaotic right now, but it's a really uncertain time for that company right now. So they're not making nearly as strong plays as you see where Facebook is specifically saying, here's videos we're recommending without an algorithm. Instagram specifically saying, forget photos, we're going to videos. It's going to be the exact same full screen UX as we see in TikTok. So I think Meta is more aggressively facing that challenge right now.
Does it matter that users, at least anecdotally over on Instagram, are not happy about these changes?
It's hard to tell. So I watched recently a video from one of the chief engineers that was responding to Instagram users. And essentially what he seemed to be saying was, some of you are saying you're not happy with these changes, but we have data and most of you are. So I think Meta has this sense. People like videos. People want to be distracted. They want easier recommendations. They don't want to have to play such an aggressive role in sharing and liking and favoriting. So they think that's going to grow their user numbers. So they know there's complaints. And I've been seeing these articles a lot, especially in the last few weeks. Why are you being more like TikTok? We don't like this. Meta thinks that their users as a whole actually do.
My guest is Cal Newport, contributing writer for The New Yorker and associate professor of computer science at Georgetown University. We're talking about his latest piece, TikTok and the Fall of Social Media Giants. So let's talk about the app Be Real, which you labeled a Gen Z sensation. The app's number one right now. Can you explain to us the basics of how it works and how where does it fall in this conversation?
Well, I'll explain it with trepidation, as I'm not a member, so I don't know if I'm allowed. But from what I understand, the app actually will signal you at various points in the day to take a picture of whatever you're actually doing, so not carefully curated, not filtered, and just post it so that people can see a real-life portrayal of what people are up to, not this carefully polished Instagram-style portrayal. I think apps like Be Real are important because it shows what happens when you leave the safety of your 3 billion user social graph and say, we just want to have an app that's interesting and distracts you. You're competing against all of this. young people might go to Be Real. People my age might spend more time on Wordle. I mean, you're in a competitive marketplace of every source of mobile distraction once you leave behind that competitive advantage of all the people you know are on this network, all the interesting people are on this network. We have the complex topology that can allow interesting things to surface. When you leave that all behind, the competition gets innovative, it gets fast, it gets agile. It's really a dangerous place, I think, for these large companies to participate in battle.
You wrote this great end to your piece where you said, the internet at its best should be weird, energetic, and exciting, featuring both homegrown idiosyncrasy and sudden trends that flash supernova bright before exploding into the novel elements that spur future ideas and generate novel connections. Sort of made me think about that saying about Austin, keep Austin weird. All of these small places that people discover and then sort of make mainstream. Do you think that these kind of platforms like Facebook and Twitter have flattened that? Or is there opportunity in social media platforms to have a vibe, to help the internet be vibrant?
I think once we get away from these pseudo-monopolistic positions where there's, let's say, three networks that everyone spends the majority of their time on and everyone uses, when we get away from that to a more fragmented landscape of many different services, you have a Be Real, you have whatever else might be popular at the time, maybe 20, 30 different services that various people use. That fragmentation, which requires the fall of these pseudo-monopolies to achieve, I think will lead to a more interesting and weirder internet. It goes back to where we were heading before, out of nowhere, Facebook came and began to just gobble up the entire Web 2.0 revolution, hide it behind the walls of their server farms and say, this is ours now. I think we have a chance of actually moving beyond there.
Which just sounds like describe the way that the three major broadcast networks used to be, and then there was cable, and then there was streaming.
We see it, yep, in all sorts of markets.
The name of the piece is TikTok and the Fall of Social Media Giants. You should check it out. It's in The New Yorker. My guest has been Cal Newport, contributing writer for The New Yorker and associate professor of computer science at Georgetown University. Thanks, Cal.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.